Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to A Good Football Show. My name is Pat Corain. Today we are going to be diving deep into the 2022 wide receiver class, the rookie class. And to do that, I'm joined by Matthew Friedman of Fantasy Pros, Davis Maddock of Sports Grid, Anthony Amico of Establish the Run. Guys, how's it going?
So good.
It's going great. Today it's not going to be a good football show. It's going to be a great football show. By the way, I have to say, if Davis is making fun of my Twitter handle, Matt F. The Oracle, why can't we make fun of Amiksta with his Twitter handle? Come on.
We can. No, we absolutely can. Bad branding by you guys. Corain and I got the branding correct.
Well, I just want to point out,
I actually kind of like the Matt F. The Oracle. I mean, it's a deep cut at this point, referencing a league episode from what, 10 years ago?
But like 13.
But pretty amazing reference.
I've made it for him. Far without actually, like, most people don't even make fun of me. They don't even stop to make fun of me. So I think I made the bar so low that it's just not worth it for people to address it. So thank you for addressing it so it could get the airtime that it needs.
See, I've sometimes thought that I screwed up the branding with a name like Corain. No one knows how to spell Corain when they first hear it. So if I had something, you know, that just kind of flipped. Davis Maddock is easier. No one's going to misspell that stuff.
You got to talk to the powers that be at NBC Sports. Why do they not have you with the blue check mark?
That would be up to me. I haven't applied for it.
You're falling behind, brother.
Okay. I don't know. I feel like Denny doesn't have it. You know, it's kind of a thing.
You wear it as a badge of honor.
Yeah, I'll kind of keep that up. We are going to be diving into the wide receiver class, as I mentioned, and we're going to be going in the order of grinding the mocks expected draft position. That was updated a couple days ago, and so it should be fairly in line with what, you know, the general consensus is on where these wide receivers will be selected. We've got the top 10 guys in terms of expected draft position that we'll be going through, and then hopefully we'll have enough time for some bonus guys that didn't quite make the top 10. Roughly, this is the guys who look like they have pretty good chances of being selected in the first two rounds. But one of the things I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on is if you think this draft position is, you know, kind of in line with your expectations, or you think maybe these guys could go a bit higher or lower than Grinding the Mocks has. And for those who don't know, Grinding the Mocks, free site that just aggregates mock draft data. So pretty useful for this type of exercise. But let's go ahead and get started with Garrett Wilson. He has the top draft position expectation with a 14.6 average expected draft position. Friedman, I'll kind of kick it over to you. What do you like about Wilson? What do you view him as in terms of, like, is he the top wide receiver in this class? If so, why? If not, why?
One thing that's interesting about Wilson is that going to the mock drafts even last year, like the distant mock drafts, looking at this class, Wilson already then was one of the top two wide receivers. And a lot of mocks, he was already the number one receiver. And that was before he really had a big breakout season. And so the market has been on him for a while, and he definitely delivered in this past year. You know, a big season, over 1,100 yards from scrimmage, 13 touchdowns in 11 games. He's not a like a massive producer as a runner, but he, you know, he did have 76 yards and a rushing touchdown on four carries. You do like to see the guys who have that well-rounded skill set. And then he did it at the combine, even though he's not a big guy. And like, I'll just say, I have the preference for the big guys. Like, I still have that bias. He's not a big guy, but he did blaze the 40 time with the 4.3s. So he has a lot of the things that you like entering the NFL at a young age after just 3 years in college. So he checks a lot of the boxes. And I do think that with what he showed at the combine, what he showed as a junior, he has a very good chance of going in the top, I wouldn't say top 10, but top half of the first round. I think it's very close personally between him and Treylon Burks for Dynasty in terms of wide receiver one. But I do have him as the first wide receiver going off the board.
Amico, I feel like he does check a lot of the boxes analytically. He doesn't like crush the production metrics, but do you agree he basically kind of checks every box?
Yeah, I mean, there's no hole that I'm obviously looking at and saying like, oh, like this is a problem. I mean, like Friedman said, like I think in an ideal world, like you prefer guys to be as big as possible, as fast as possible. I mean, he's really fast, but he's not that big. I mean, I guess that's a knock, but like
he weighs 5 more pounds than Wandale.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's cool. we can't even talk about him right now. I just, you know, the thing with Wilson is he was able to produce with a lot of talent around him, right? Like he started his career with Jameson Williams there. Obviously Chris Olave is there. You know, they have a true sophomore who's probably going to be the top receiver next year, or at least like one of the top three guys off the board next year. So he's been able to produce with a lot of talent around him. And I think that tells you that like this profile could look a lot better than it does. And it's already really good.
Yeah. I mean, Jameson Williams literally transferred from this program. Davis, how much are you factoring that in? Just the really like off the charts level of target competition that he had.
I mean, the thing about Garrett Wilson for me is that he's just never going to be my number one wide receiver in this class when Treylon Burks is right there. And I know that Wilson had a good combine and Burks had like an adequate combine. I mean, his 40 time was fine. His weight was fine. And I guess he did reportedly do better at all the other stuff at his pro day, jumped higher, jumped further, all that stuff. So if you want to take those numbers, you know, that's a little bit better for him. But I mean, 6 foot, 183. It's like that style of player is more in vogue now, but I can't really shake my literally at this point decade old biases that someone like Treylon Burks is, and especially the way Treylon Burks, I anticipate him being used. Like I think whoever drafts him probably will just stick him in the slot right away while he figures out the NFL. You know, I think I was talking to Kevin Cole. I can't say for sure. But yeah, it was Kevin Cole for sure. And he was looking at PFF stuff when guys were getting pressed. And Burks actually did really well in the situations when he was pressed at Arkansas. So that says to me that if I'm going to break the tie anyway, because Burks is bigger, basically.
Well, it's interesting because Burks, we'll get to Burks, but he's actually not the number two wide receiver by expected draft position. That's Drake London.
Yeah.
London's another big wide receiver and a guy who like...
He's too big though.
Okay, because I was worried he was too skinny. He was listed at 210, but then he weighed in at the combine at 219. So, you know, he's like 6'4". So that 219 makes me feel a lot better about him compared to 210, where there's not many guys who've played in the NFL at kind of, you know, a 6'4", 210 type of frame. So are you not as in on him, Davis, because he's too big?
This is incredible.
Well, it's a... Probably the biggest red flag of me to all time is when a wide receiver does not run their 40 at the combine for a non-medical reason. Like if a guy's not like, oh, I like what Isaiah Spiller said, he tore his abductor muscle, and Devonta Smith gave some fake medical reason why he didn't run. But when a guy doesn't provide a medical reason for not running at the combine, that is a red flag to me. And London also clearly is going to play a position that like doesn't really exist in the NFL anymore. Like how many guys play that flanker position where their entire job is to stick up against the boundary and catch contested passes? Like NFL offensive coordinators don't run those plays anymore. They don't design plays that way.
I have to step in on
yeah.
Because I just
good.
Yeah, he loves Drake
London. Love Drake London. Like I. Oh, first of all, he did. fracture his ankle to end his season.
Yeah, he had a medical reason, didn't he?
he's
all right. Well, then I'm wrong.
But I mean, I thought Pat the weight thing definitely was the one thing I was worried about, because the tall, skinny guys worry me, just from a BMI perspective. But
yeah, John Baldwin Sisson.
Yeah, that, so like again, though, we talk about a guy with like pretty decent target competition, like Michael Pittman, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like he played with these guys and he managed to produce. Basketball guy, which I know we usually reserve for the tight ends, but his first year focusing just on football was this season, and I think that to me that adds a little bit to what we may see in the future, just because I mean he's not working out the same muscle groups as a basketball player as he is as a football player, and now he gets to focus just on football. I do think that matters, and he did have a great season this year. I mean, receiving yards per team pass attempt over 3, 42% dominator, like really crushed. And you know, I'm looking at the comparable players that he comes up with for me, you know, based on his weight and a bunch of the production stuff. And there's like no busts, like Michael Floyd is like the only bust on the list for me, really, out of like his top 10 comps. And I don't know, like you get the AJ Browns, you get the Mike Evans, you get those guys on the list. And those are the guys for me where we're talking about true alpha, you know, WR1s in fantasy, WR1s in dynasty, like that's what London looks like to me.
I think I'm haunted by the ghost of JJ Arcega-Whiteside, to be honest, like a big Pac-12 wide receiver who scored a bunch of touchdowns and I'm all in. And then they yeah. don't play. Yeah, it's not great.
He does look a little more like Josh Gordon at 219, which is enticing.
Right.
On the basketball note, normally we don't care. He did have a 540 dunk, which I think is
very something, impressive.
Yeah, especially because we don't yet have measurables, so they might run it as pro day. But Freeman, I wanted to ask, like, he only played 8 games in his final season, and that final season is like really the only reason we're excited about him. Does that matter at all?
It probably should matter a little bit, but for me, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to be the optimist on him. And I do take Davis's point about sort of stylistically, when you watch him play, there might be some concerns, but like one, I'm not a film guy. I'm not going to be, you know, like pretending to be a film guy. And then two, like he reminds me of Mike Williams. Like I feel like he can play sort of, I feel like he can play that sort of role in the NFL, where even if he's kind of limited in how he's used, I still think he can dominate in that way. And he's young, he's entering the NFL, you know, after 3 years. I thought he did fairly well as a freshman, given the target competition that he had. So I'm encouraged, especially when he's going to have that first round draft capital. Like I think it's a lock that he goes in the top 24. So I'm going to be in on Drake London, not as much as I'm in on Treylon Burks, but I still like Drake London quite a bit. I am assuming he's going to be a tad slower than people want him to be.
Yeah, I think that's because the thing that worries me a little bit about that is he had a lot of production on screen passes. And it's like, you know, it's like contested catch and screen pass. And especially when I thought he was 210, I was like, I don't know if he's going to be able to do either at the NFL level. Now I feel better about his contested catch ability, but it's still, you know, I don't know if he's going to be getting used on a ton of like manufactured yards after catch stuff, you know, at the shallow level.
So who makes more sense at 11 for the commies, Garrett Wilson or Drake London? Cause they're taking a wide receiver. I'd make them like -150 to take a wide receiver at 11.
I'll take
it. I think Wilson makes more sense, cause he have the deep threat already.
And his old college teammate, right? McLaurin.
I guess. Do they overlap? I don't think they overlap.
They might not have.
But they've overlapped.
You know, but Buckeye love though. You get it.
I don't know. I would go honestly with Treylon Burks. I mean, I'm just going to, you know, like I'm going to take a shot on the guy who feels like he could be AJ Brown. But that's just me and my pigheadedness. But if it's between Drake and Garrett Wilson, I would probably go Garrett Wilson because I think he complements a little bit more what they have in McLaurin.
All right, Davis, give us the rundown on Treylon Burks, who's not too small. He's not too big. He's just the right size.
He's just right. So Treylon Burks is the guy that the Dynasty nerds like the most. I mean, he was phenomenal his final season at Arkansas. Probably most importantly, though, he played as a true freshman, a 19-year-old at Arkansas. Got on the field. I guess his breakout season was age 20, not age. Well, Amico, is he a true 20-year-old breakout, or do you have him as a 21-year-old?
I have him breaking out in year two, so
yeah,
we grind the decimals here. So,
and he's 6'2", 225. Played in the slot a lot at Arkansas. They used him in a lot of different ways. Like Corrine and I were talking about this the other day, that even though he played out of the slot, his average depth of target was still fine. His yards per route run, like all that stuff, was still good. And really one of those situations, not as insane as like a Dez Bryant or Calvin Johnson or whatever, but just one of those situations where he's the only, you know, truly the only NFL caliber skill position player on that offense that he played with, and there was still nothing the defenses could do with him. He did have, I mean, just you just have to say he did have a suboptimal combine. He wasn't quite as fast as expected with like the fastest combine of all time. Like something was going on with the guns there, and you know his jumps and like his explosion metrics were not great at the combine, better at the pro day. But I think assuming that he goes, I mean, if he goes at 24 to the Cowboys, I mean, he's going to be the 101 in these dynasty leagues for sure.
Freeman, you mentioned AJ Brown, which I feel like is the very exciting upside comp for Burks. Are you worried about like the explosion numbers? I learned about the flying 20, which is the last 20 yards of the 40 yard dash, where apparently Burks was just fine in. So, you know, once he gets up to speed, he's there. But is he going to have that AJ Brown like ability to generate yards after catch if it takes him a bit to get up to speed?
I will be optimistic and say he does. Like, he does have that ability. Again, I'm not like an expert tape grinder, so like I don't feel like I'm not going to be able to like break down the nuances of like if he's used in this way, then he has a lot of yak capability. But just based on the numbers, I think he has it. And a dude who dominates in the SEC 2 years in a row before he's a senior, I mean, you have to be pretty enthusiastic about that guy, especially when he's big. And like the rushing production is something that really intrigues, because I don't think he's really going to be used in that way in the NFL. But the fact that the team was like, okay, we've got to get the ball to this guy in any manner that we can. He had pretty decent rushing production in his sophomore and junior year. And as a freshman, he was actually a pretty good return man as a big guy. Like, that is a Dez Bryant-esque type of thing. So I am pretty enthusiastic about what we see out of him. And by the way, to Davis's point about something was off about this combine with the times, he absolutely is right. This is the first year in Indianapolis that they've done the combine on the new turf. So I do think that something, you know, like was happening, like the turf is now faster in Indianapolis than it was when they had the old turf. So there is something there to like the times were off.
Amico, I mentioned that Wilson kind of checks all the boxes, but doesn't like crush them. Burks crushes them. How much does that matter to you that he's just like smashing all the advanced metric stuff?
I mean, it matters a lot. And I think that like ceiling wise, he probably has the highest ceiling out of all these receivers. The thing for me is that like the floor is lower than a couple of these other guys to me too. You know, like I want to be excited. I want to be optimism guy. I still really like Treylon Burks and he still ranks really highly for me, but it's like when you see the athletic testing and it's not, you know, 4.4s, when it's 4.5s, and I'm not even saying we ever thought it would be 4.4s. When you see like the low agility and the low jumps, then you're like, okay, like it wouldn't completely shock me if he was N'Keal Harry. Like it wouldn't completely shock me if he was JJ. Like it wouldn't completely shock me. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but like it is there, like in the range versus, you know, maybe like a Garrett Wilson. Like I just obviously wouldn't really expect that to be the case. So I still really like Burks. I think everything Freeman said is spot on. And I also would just note that in week three of this past college season, he did log like the next gen, like the mile per hour, 22.6 miles per hour, like high, you know, fastest guy that week. So like, I think like in the games, the speed has clearly been there, even if it wasn't, you know, in the 40 yard dash.
I would say it's encouraging that Amico didn't mention Laquan Treadwell as one of the worst case scenarios. But like, I feel like that is like the worst case scenario. Like there's this Laquan Treadwell type of thing. Although like Treadwell did see a little something of a renaissance. Like I could see a situation where Burks maybe disappoints for a couple of years.
Post.
For dynasty leagues, yeah. It's not helpful if he's Laquan Treadwell. that's a bust.
Yeah.
I just wanted to put some numbers to, well, my thing's freezing, so I can't get, I have a stat on an article coming out tomorrow. That just shows just how dominant he was. Oh, here it is. Okay. So since 2007, Burks is one of only 7 3-year wide receivers to post a 35% career yardage share. So I was talking about how he's just crushing the metrics. His yardage share of 35% is off the charts. One of only 7 3-year guys to do it at 210 plus pounds. The other 6, Calvin Johnson, Kenny Britt, Dez Bryant, Alshon Jeffrey, Allen Robinson, and Amari Cooper. Big wide receiver with this level of production is kind of like the gold standard. So
we love to see it.
Please don't be Laquan Treadwell. Okay, let's move on to, and I should mention, Treylon Burks' expected draft position here on Grinding the Mocks was 21.4. I think maybe he could fall to the early second, maybe, but it seems like he's pretty locked in as a first round pick. The next guy, oh god.
See, I think this is such a bad class overall that and the wide receiver is just such a need for a lot of these teams that have multiple first round picks. Like the Eagles have 3 first round picks and they are like, they want to waive Rager. Like they want to completely redo their wide receiver room. The Bills need a wide receiver. The Cowboys need a wide receiver. The Chiefs need a wide receiver. Like I think we could see a lot of wide receivers go super early. So I don't think he'll get to
I don't think so either. Especially he did have better jumps at his pro day, which probably locks him into the first round. Moving to the next guy, Chris Olave. He's got an expected draft position here of 22.2. I think he looks locked into the first round. All the stuff about, like, you know, kind of the intangible stuff is pretty very, very bullish on him. Scouts and teams seem really excited about him. But Amico, he is a 4-year player. The first guy that we've talked about that is not declaring early. You've shown that really matters. He also wasn't like that productive given that he's a 4-year player, but he's dealing with all the same talented competition stuff that Garrett Wilson is dealing with. Wilson, Jameson Williams was there, and of course, Jackson Smith and Jigba. So how do you view a bit of a complicated profile, I think, with Olave?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I just really wish he came out last year. I'd love to know why he didn't. Like, I'd love to know if it's just like a personal goal or if like the committee was like, hey, you're not going to go in the first round. Like, I'd love to get the background there. But yeah, it's kind of weird because honestly, like the total profile looks a lot like Garrett Wilson. Like if Garrett Wilson played a 4th year, you know, and that's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm not trying to like dismiss that difference, but they're like similar weight, similar speed, like similar career production. But Olave has the 4th year and clearly took a step back, you know, behind the 2 other guys that you mentioned. So that matters. And I think that's why he's not in like this group, like the group of guys we just talked about for dynasty for me. But there's clearly still a path where he's really productive for an NFL team. It sounds like the scouts really like Olave. They say he's really smooth.
Big NFL loves Olave.
Yeah. Which matters. I mean, that's really important. So I might have him too low right now. I think he's like our wide receiver 8 or something like that at ETR. So I may have to move him up, but the 4-year thing for me is really tough to get over because typically if a guy goes 4 years, like you really want him to break out in year 1 or year 2, and he didn't do that. But then there's also like the Ohio State wide receiver thing where I feel like they just never really know what they're doing. So,
yeah, I think it's a very complicated profile because it's harder to give him credit for the talented target competition point because he was the oldest to the furthest ahead in school. So he's the guy you really wanted to stand out.
Right.
And he really didn't. In some ways it's a little Devontae Smith-esque, but then he didn't have the final crushing season the way Devontae Smith. He didn't win the Heisman season. So that little detail. So, Friedman, where are you at on Olave?
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned Devontae Smith because that honestly is the comp in my brain in terms of the profile, but without the massive final season. But I think he has a high floor, relatively low ceiling in comparison to the other guys we've talked about before him. Like I think he will have NFL success. I just don't think it's going to be massive NFL success. And what that means for fantasy is like a few wide receiver three type of seasons, but I don't think he's going to be someone that in 3 years from now, we're super excited to have on our rosters. I think he could just be someone who's like decent enough.
Is Marquise Brown a kind of comp in that way?
Yeah. That's interesting.
Some of us are still excited to own Marquise Brown.
That's interesting. I don't think he has the upside that Brown has.
Okay.
Like I don't think he's going to be that, even though he's got the 4.39 speed, I still don't think he's going to be the lid lifter in the way, like the game changer that Marquise Brown is.
Davis, I feel like we share this bias of like Olave's not gonna fail, but he's also not gonna be that exciting, so we're just gonna pick someone else.
Yeah, like give me on, maybe even in like when I do my rankings, I'll have Olave ahead of Jameson Williams, but put me on the clock and it's my team.
You're taking Williams.
And it's my team that I have to manage and look at for the next year. Like I'm taking Jameson Williams, like no doubt about it. Especially because Williams is gonna, I mean, he's not gonna fall, but he's just gonna go later because he's coming off of a torn ACL, which means his chance of being selected by the Bills, by the Buccaneers, by the Cowboys, by the Chiefs, by all the good teams is exponentially higher because he might go pick 28.
Well, give us the rundown on Williams.
Can we stop trying to kill Gabe Davis, by the way?
Just make your peace with it now. The Bills are adding either a good free agent wide receiver or a first or second round wide receiver. People just got a deal.
Play three wide receivers. I'm fine. Gabe Davis can survive if they add, assuming Beasley's out of there. But Davis, go ahead and give us the rundown on Jameson Williams, who is actually next on this list. Expected draft position of 23.3. I don't know if some of these mocks are still baking in prior to the ACL tear, but I've seen recent mocks, post-combine mocks, where he's gone late first round, like around 30th, even with the ACL tear that he suffered in the national championship game.
Well, and it's interesting, too. He's also very skinny. He's 6'2", 180, which is not great. Now, again, charitably, you could say, well, the guy's torn his ACL. He hasn't been able to lift mm-hmm. weights, hasn't been able to do his whole thing. So maybe he plays more like 190 or whatever. But, you know, you and I were talking about this like 2 weeks ago. And the cool thing about Jameson Williams is you just straight up know the role that guy's playing in the NFL. He's coming in day one. You know what he's going to do. He's running down the field and he's going to run past the safeties. And also, he's only 20 years old. So, like, he can learn more. He can learn to do more complex things at the NFL level. But I mean, right away, he already has a role. I don't hold the Ohio State transfer against him because look at the guys that he transferred to not play with. Olave, probably a first round pick. Garrett Wilson, probably a first round pick. Smith Enigma might be the best of all of them. And he's mm-hmm. going to go very high next year. And there was another guy who I'm forgetting who was there as well when he was there, who got drafted highly. Who am I forgetting? It doesn't matter. But as an excuse for a lack of production, basically. I'm not holding it against him. And the guy absolutely dominated the SEC. I mean, every game that he played. Like, the point spread of the Georgia game moved when it was, he mattered to that game. Like, he's so good. And you're going to be able to get him at a discount because he tore his ACL.
Friedman, I feel like I saw you mention on Twitter that he would have been your wide receiver one in this class had he not torn his ACL.
Yeah, I think so. And that's assuming that the athleticism he showed when he was a high school recruit would have translated over into the combine and he would have had a good athletic profile. Yeah, I think in that case, he probably would have been my wide receiver one. It would have been close with Treylon Burks, but I do think Jameson Williams would have been the wide receiver one. Now, with the ACL, with Wilson and Olave running in the 4.3s, I do have in the rankings, I have Jameson Williams at number 5, but like I'm with Davis. Like when the rubber like meets the road and I'm going to need to make a draft pick, I'm going to want, in terms of just the guy on my team, I'm going to want Jameson Williams more than some of the guys ranked ahead of him.
I have him 4 right now just because I'm like already baking in that bias. I have him ahead of Olave just because I want to be excited about Jameson Williams, but Amico, like for dynasty perspective, the thing I struggle with him is like, okay, we have to factor in the discount for the ACL, but that's also, we know how this is going to play out most likely, right? He's going to probably play a few games as a rookie. Most likely he's not going to be as good as he ultimately will be because it'll be less than a year removed from the ACL tear. That's going to hurt his stock in the dynasty trade market. He's probably going to be available at discount. You're going to be holding him underwater probably from what you had to pay to draft him in the rookie draft. Like, that's almost a guarantee, which isn't really how you want to make bets, is to make a bet where you're going to be immediately underwater on. So like, all right, but then on the other hand, maybe people just hold him with an iron grip after the rookie year and you end up not having enough exposure to a guy you're excited about. How do you kind of think through that?
Yeah. So I think I'm just really monitoring how his body like progresses, because the pro day I know is at the end of the month. I would really just like to see him be a little heavier. I think that's the only thing I care about. Like, obviously he's not going to work out, but like, just show me that you can put the weight back on and I'll kind of be back in. Like, cause like we said earlier, the tall, skinny thing, that's not a great profile. Now he has a track background. Like, he literally he's from a track family. You know, the speed is there. Like, he's raced guys when he was younger who are like in the low four threes. Like, he's that fast. He's that guy. And this year he probably ran the 4.2s. So kind of a missed opportunity there. So I'd like to know like how he's progressing from the ACL. I mean, the national championship game is like right at the start of the year. Like, it's not a complete death knell to his rookie season. Like, he could realistically only miss like a couple games at the start of the year, and then he's being a guy that is using the.
Yeah, we just had a guy come back from a torn Achilles in 6 months. Anything is possible. Yeah.
And it hurt his draft stock for next year. People did not like what they saw.
The thing that I'm worried about, honestly, and I think I talked about this with Friedman on Twitter a couple weeks ago, like very shortly, like, I'm just not really sure like what Jameson Williams is worth from a fantasy perspective, because we know that guys that look like Jameson Williams traditionally, especially if he is like a skinny guy and not like a bigger guy, like, if he is just running like those clear outs, like if he's Henry Ruggs, that's not great for fantasy. Like, it might be really good for whatever team drafts him, but it may not be great for fantasy. And that, I think, along with what you mentioned in terms of like maybe being immediately underwater, is what I'm trying to figure out. He's wide receiver 4 for me because I think he's really good, but I'm just trying to figure out like where it fits into like the dynasty puzzle.
Could he be Will Fuller?
Yeah. I mean, Will Fuller is on my list of guys, and that's obviously a pretty good asset minus the injuries. So I think that's there. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I want to be excited about him, but it is tough. I agree. I think the weight point is a really good one. If he balks up,
who cares if you're underwater when he gets there? Like, you're not gonna care that you were underwater for 12 months when he gets there the next year.
I mean, yeah, sure. If you see the post ACL 2022 games and don't go, oh god, what have I done? That's, I just don't want to have that feeling.
I feel like this is like the football version of Davis's Bitcoin tweet. Like,
doesn't matter if you bought it 60K.
Don't look at the chart, dude. Just on a long enough timeline, you're gonna be right.
All right, that kind of wraps up the guys who have like a really good shot of going in round one. Moving on to the guys who have a good shot to get into round two. But before we do that, we're gonna take a quick break.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The 2022 NBC Sports Edge Fantasy Baseball Draft Guide is available now, and we're giving our listeners a special offer. Get 22% off our draft guide and an annual Edge Plus subscription when you use promo code BASES22. We get you ready for your fantasy football draft with expert insight and tools at one low price. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/EdgePlus and use promo code BASES22 at checkout to save big this season. All right, Amico, another fourth-year guy here, Jahan Dotson. He wasn't hyper-productive either. He's also not all that fast. He's small, and he didn't run a sub-4.4 40. He didn't have like a really high ADOT, so I'm not even sure if he's an NFL deep threat. But he's got expected draft position of 36.9. I've seen him mocked in the first round. So this is kind of the first guy in this draft class where I think the NFL is going to like him potentially a lot more than me. But I've also, Travis May likes him. I know there's things to like. Where are you at on him?
I'm definitely on the lower end. I mean, I think, again, small, the speed really isn't where you want it to be, especially in a year where we're talking about the track is running fast and he's not in the 4.3s at his size. That's a concern for me. I know the scouts really like his hands, like everything that I've heard from like Lance Sterline and Dane Brugler, like they say, oh, like, you know, really professional catching the ball, all that stuff. But I just don't think he's going to be a first round pick. I don't think that that's going to happen. And if he's a second round pick with a design role, like it's just not as enticing to me. I'm pretty much out. Like we're going to rank him. We have him ranked really low. I don't really see a reason to move up because I just don't really see the, ceiling, and I need to have that.
What if Dotson is the Hardman of the class, like the bad wide receiver who gets drafted by the good offense?
Oh gosh, don't do that. Doesn't always work out. Choice. Yeah. I mean, as you see with Hardman, it doesn't really always work out, but it would be something, right, where that would happen and we'd be like, oh, like now we're going to move him up, you know, in the ranks. And
yeah,
I'd like to avoid that. I'd like to avoid that mistake.
Davis, how do you view him? Like, is he actually a deep threat? Or is he just kind of like a small traditional wide receiver?
I mean, he was like really good at Penn State. Was really their only guy in like games against like Wisconsin, really good defense, Auburn, really good defense. I mean, he had 11 for 127 against Ohio State, like, you know, but it's kind of, I'm just like, you know, what do you do here? Right. With Dotson, it's like, well, you know, you normally expect guys like this to be really good kicker and punt returners in college. And he was fine. He had one return for a touchdown, but not a ton of special teams production. And he, look, if we're crushing guys for being small, I mean, he's Wandale size. He's 2 inches taller than Wandale, but same weight. And a four-year prospect, he is going to be, he's going to be 22 his rookie season. Like, I just don't see a ton to get excited about here, particularly because anytime I'm going to be on board in any draft, George Pickens is also going to be available when Dotson is available. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I will be running to smash the button on Pickens.
Friedman, where are you at on Dotson?
Yeah, I think the comp for him in my brain, even if the numbers don't go there, is like a smaller, slower, less peripherally productive Percy Harvin and older. You know, so like I think people want to talk about him as if all of that sounds horrible when you phrase it that way. But I think people talk about him as if he's like this electric playmaker, right? As if he has like this instant ability to kind of like fit this niche role within an offense where you just get him the ball and then let him make plays. And I don't know if he actually has that ability. Although, I mean, to Davis's point, he was really good at Penn State the past 2 years as a receiver, but I don't think he has the peripheral production that normally accompanies that type of electric playmaking skill set that people are talking about with him.
That makes sense. All right, Freeman, kick us off on Pickens, because I'm with Davis. I think he's pretty exciting, and he's the next guy on the list with a expected draft position of 43.5.
Yeah, you know, Pickens, it's interesting because I feel like there was a lot of hype with him entering college. He had a good recruitment profile, good athleticism, had a really nice freshman year. And then after that, there was just sort of like this decline, whether that's, you know, sort of real or perceived, but, you know, had injury issues. I think wasn't quite as good his sophomore year as he was his freshman year. But I mean, hey, he did have that first year breakout, which like that counts for a decent amount. So I think he's got sufficient athleticism. Like, I'm with Davis in that I see him as a upside player, But I'm also a little bit skeptical in that I kind of don't like going with guys who seemingly got worse in college as they got older. But the first year breakout and the athleticism, those are pretty significant marks in his favor.
And another tall, skinny guy, Miko. I feel like how you feel about Pickens, you know, has a little bit to do with, like, have you played long enough to draft Justin Hunter? Yeah. So he might scare you a little.
Yeah. No, it's definitely true. You know, I mean, his first two seasons really looked very similar in terms of the overall production, for, you know, from a team level, from an individual level. And like the spring ACL tear just absolutely murders everything, because it's like we wanted to see what he would have done this season. And that would have probably given us, I mean, it's not like Georgia was going to throw the ball over the yard, but like you want to see what a guy like that does in his final year. And the team, you know, obviously admits that when he came back, he wasn't being used fully. He only had 5 catches in 4 games. I think that's to be expected. Like, you basically throw this year out. And so I think that what we're left with is a guy who just has like the widest range of outcomes in the class. Like, if he ends up being a dude, it wouldn't shock me, right? Like, he has, like Friedman said, he has the recruitment profile. He was productive young and early. That's really good. But did he maybe decline a little bit? Is he the same guy after the injury? Like, these are legitimate questions that we have to ask. Like, is he the right body type? So, like, you know, we could be talking about this guy in a year, like we're talking about Terrace Marshall, where it's like, oh, like he did nothing this year.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Which he kind of looks like Terrace Marshall a little bit.
Nah, dude, you guys are going to regret these takes. You're going to want these takes stricken from the record.
Tell us why.
Dude, because he is, I mean, he is prototypically stuff that we look at, right? Super early breakout, you know, did it in the SEC, did it when he wasn't playing with, you know, skilled teammates. And I mean, I do think one thing is that the COVID shortened and disrupted seasons messed with a lot of these guys' profiles. That's why, like, we were just talking about, well, Dotson was a 4-year player. It's like, well, and Olave was a 4-year player. Like, I don't know, maybe they hated, you know, not playing in front of fans and like their quarterback randomly missing games and not having full pre- like I can totally see the impacts of like how COVID dealt with college seasons. Like, these USC guys, if you went to USC the last 2 years, you played 12 games. It's like some of these, it's just, it was so weird for so many of these guys. So I am, and of course, because I like Pickens, I'm writing off that he wasn't very good as a sophomore. Right now, if I didn't like him, I'd be like, he didn't do shit as a sophomore or so. But I mean, it's just like, one, I also think he's going to be a guy that when teams start meeting and doing everything, I think he's going to come off well, because like all the stuff that he was doing, he's an amazing run blocker. They're like all these cut ups of him being a good run blocker, which you have to do if you go to Georgia. And he like got in disciplinary problems all the time because he was just like, there's this great clip of him finishing off a run block like 15 yards down the field and just throwing this Alabama player to the ground. And I'm like, that gets me jacked up. Like, I already like Pickens, and that makes me like him even more. I'm just all in. Like, and he said he was going to run fast. I love when guys do this. He tore his ACL and he said, I'm going to put up a good time. And people were like, it was going around Twitter and they were like, well, he's going to run a 4.4 coming off a torn ACL. And then he did, which is pretty baller.
The thing that I'll say is that, and I'm not sure how much of this, I thought last year, the guys with injury history got killed in the draft. Like, all these guys who had been hurt went way lower than we were projecting them. And some of that might've been COVID, because the medical records were harder to get and meeting with players was harder to do.
It was hard. Yeah.
But it's possible that this carries over. And then Pickens is the kind of guy where, you know, he was hurt as a sophomore. Obviously he barely played this year. He's coming off an ACL. Like, that's a guy where all of a sudden it could be day two of the draft and we're at like pick 63 and we're like, why is George Pickens like still here? You know,
he becomes the new Denzel Mims.
Doesn't the 4.47 help that though? I mean, less than a year removed from the ACL tear, that's sufficient speed. And like, there's a chance he's more of a 4.39 guy or something.
No, it definitely helps. It definitely helps. I'm just, you know, I like to think in like the full range of outcomes, and I'm just trying, you know, Davis is obviously giving us the high end. So I'm the negative guy. I'm bad cop, and you know, it's fine.
Someone's got to do it.
The next guy on the list here is kind of the classic guy that I feel like back at RotoViz in 2014 would have been like a fifth, sixth, seventh round pick. But this year he's got expected draft position of 49.6. Christian Watson crushed the combine, 4.36 40, 38.5 inch vertical, 136-inch broad jump. It's kind of like one of those Charles Johnson, Jeff Janis pro day workouts that we had, but it actually came at the combine.
This is Aaron Millett, dude, you know. But the difference is he went to the Senior Bowl and was the best wide receiver there. And all the coaches that were there, all the scouts are like, oh, this guy's amazing. He's so good in practice. Like, I'm sure, you know, they talked to the coach. The Jaguars and the Lions were the coaching staffs, I think. But yeah, like and just what you need with a small school guy like this that we all used to kind of get wrong and that we learned over time was that it doesn't matter if there was some UNLV wide receiver. I was going for the name, but I forgot. But it doesn't matter if they look really good in all of our spreadsheets, if the NFL decision makers don't care. But it looks pretty, like, I feel pretty confident in saying the NFL decision makers like this guy. And I think it would not surprise me if he went ahead of Pickens or Dotson at this point, because he checked all the boxes. And also, I guess it does help that he went to NDSU, which is like the best school in his division and has put a bunch of guys in the NFL. Like, that definitely helps.
Freeman, where are you at on him?
I like him a lot. And there are whispers. I'm skeptical, but there are whispers he actually goes in the first round. I don't see that happening, but I could see how it happens given the athletic profile, given the dearth of overall talent in this class and the neediness that a lot of teams have, especially near the end of the first round, the neediness a lot of teams have for wide receivers. So I could see him maybe artificially being pushed up a little bit, you know, and then he was productive. Now, granted, he is older. He's a fifth year senior. So you don't love that. He had the red shirt and then didn't do anything as a freshman. But, you know, from his sophomore season on, he was the leading receiver on his team. You know, you like to see that he did have some production as a return man, had two kickoff returns in his junior season. Like, he's got some legit playmaking ability, and like the burn on him in the NFL, like, it's pretty hot right now. Like, people are talking about, like, oh, do you see him as a run blocker? Like, all of the things that like big NFL likes, it seems like he checks a lot of those boxes. So I think he will go pretty high in the second round, you know, and I think he's going to be someone who moves up my board because of that. I mean, I could take him above Pickens. Like, I feel like I'm a little bit too low on him right now, to be honest. And I also feel like I'm high on him at the same time.
Amico, you dug through all of the social media accounts and got the age database set up for us over at Establish a Run. If anyone's looking for birthdays, you got all of them. So, not lost on you that he was born in 1999, which makes me feel old that is old. But how much does that worry you that he's a pretty aged prospect? He's really good in his last season, but like, you hope so. He's playing at a very small school as a fifth year senior.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that generally the guys that come from like the subdivision level, I'm not as worried about the age because it usually just takes that long for these guys to get on the map. Like, obviously I wish that I'd prefer 4 years, but we can stretch it to five and say that that's fine. Like, as long as he's really productive in all those years. And I think that that's like the hard part to really suss out, because like, they're just not like a really heavy passing offense. Like, this is a team that runs the ball like 60% of the time. And it's just like brutalizing to go through the game logs, which I did. I spent like a whole Saturday morning, like going through every one of these game logs and trying to get the stats, because I'm like, I need to see what the big deal is about Christian Watson. And it's just, you know, if he had scored a few more touchdowns in his fourth season, he would have broken out then. He breaks out in his final year at a 30% dominator level. The rushing stuff is really good. Like, the stuff you hear is really good. I'm just worried that like, this guy didn't just completely crush all the time. Like, he did in his last season, but before that he really didn't. And that's the only thing holding me back. And it's easy to excuse from the standpoint that like, this is a powerhouse school. They win every year. Like, they're either winning or in the title every year in the FCS. And like, they just have a way of doing things, I would imagine, that doesn't involve like making Christian Watson an NFL superstar. Like, they're just trying to win games, which they do very well. So I'm probably going to move him up in the next update for ETR, because I think that the case for him is very compelling and his body type obviously presents upside. I'm afraid to get hurt, I guess. Like, I don't want to be overreacting to the, the old guy who crushes at the Senior Bowl, who isn't Cooper right. Cup with like 4 years of massive production.
He's 6'4", 208. He has 10 and an eighth inch hands, which Blair Andrews has written about being important. But I went through the same box score exercise that you did, came out with 24% career yardage share. Not good. That's just straight up not good. Like, that would be a bit of a red flag if he was a three-year player. He's a fifth-year player. That, I think, is a major red flag. On the other hand, 15.6 career ADOT. No doubt about how he's going to be used. He's a deep threat. He's a big body deep threat. He had 11.9 career yards per target. It's a little Terry McLaurin-esque to me, where like there's nothing to like analytically except that he's got good size, he's got speed, he's got a clear NFL role, and he's going to get draft position. Is that a fair kind of comp? Obviously, it's an upside comp.
That's how I feel. That's exactly how I feel.
All right, we'll probably end up. I'm not going to miss out on him. I'm going to have some, but I don't think I'm going to be chasing a ton. All right, let's move to the guy that I'm going to have more than some of. Sky Moore, who has a 51.3 expected draft position. Amiko, I'll start with you, because I feel like this guy, I mean, he checks all the boxes, and then he checks them in big ways. Like, there's really, honestly, like when I went through and tried to find the red flags, I think the only red flag is that it was in a non-Power 5 team. And, you know, that's a little bit of a concern. You don't see a ton of like really successful guys coming out of those schools. But you also don't really see a ton of those guys like getting drafted that are three-year players. Most of the guys come out as four-year players. So he's in a very like small group of players in that sense. But otherwise, like literally everything that we want, Sky Moore has.
Yeah, I mean, even Corey Davis came back for a fourth season, and he was prolific at Western Michigan. So, yeah, I mean, we love Sky Moore, right? I mean, he has massive hands. He's 195 in a smaller frame. Had a really good workout. Like, even some of the guys that, even some of the film guys who maybe weren't as high on Sky Moore came away from the combine saying, you know, this guy looks like a professional receiver. He has the demeanor. He, you know, he has the toughness. He makes plays. So that's really good in terms of just like, I feel like he is just like a rock solid round two pick at this point. And that's really important. You mentioned the production. It's really good. You know, 3 year player with the breakout, he produced right away. I think that a guy like Sky Moore in the past, again, like if he doesn't get that draft capital, we're worried. But because it's going to be there, I feel really good about being there. You know, I think he's going to be probably a pretty good player. And like the sneaky target competition that he had was D. Eskridge, who was a much older player who obviously was in better position to catch the ball.
Fifth year at the time. So fifth year to a sophomore.
I think that is very good. And he's a receiver who wears 24. So, you know, I mean, you can ask Harditz after this. Like, he means he's a baller. I mean, that's just, we know this.
Yeah. Davis, are you in on him?
I mean, how could you not? How could you not be in on a guy named Sky Moore, two Ys, who was productive with another NFL player on his roster, D. Eskridge? Again, due to COVID stuff, only got to play 5 games in 2020, but was, you know, a relative breakout there, 388 yards, 3 touchdowns in 5 games, you know, got on the field at 19, crushed the combine. I mean, and also another guy that got lots of praise from, you know, just from coaches, scouts and everything like that. Like, you got to read the tea leaves with that. You need you know, your Dan Orlovsky types to be in on him. And it seems like they are, which is pretty good for his eventual status in the NFL, I think. So, and I think he could also be like a surprising guy who goes higher than expected. You know, you could see him call it at like 45 or something, because I think so many wide receivers are going to go at such a position of need as all these teams around the NFL are transitioning to 3 wide receivers as their base set. And so many teams are, I mean, there are so many teams that desperately need a wide receiver. It's like unbelievable.
Freeman, to your point about Laquon Treadwell earlier, kind of like, you know, a guy at least sticking in the league, I feel like that's, you know, Sky Moore to an extent where like even in his like worst case scenario, he's probably Rashard Higgins and like has like a, you know, like he sticks around for 5 or 6 years in a non-fantasy relevant way. Or maybe like a Christian Kirk who like doesn't quite get there, but still a very useful NFL player. But then I also think he has a ceiling. Do you view him the same way, as like a high floor but also high ceiling type of player?
Yeah, I do view him that way. I was a little more skeptical about that perspective before the combine, but you know, when you saw the athletic profile attached to the college production, yeah, I think that gives him a pretty significant ceiling. The one thing that is a little bit of a drawback, and I feel like I've mentioned this, with Jahan Dotson, he doesn't have the peripheral stats that normally accompany someone like of his size, right? Like normally we'll see a guy get more usage as a ball carrier, more usage as a return man. Like we just didn't see that with Sky Moore. And, you know, maybe there's an explanation there. Maybe they just thought, okay, this guy is our number one receiver. We use him in that way. And we don't worry about getting him involved in other ways. Maybe the offense he was in wasn't all that inventive, but the production, especially as a receiver, the production is there. The athletic profile is there. I think that there's a pretty significant tier between the first five guys that we talked about and everyone else after that. But right now, Sky Moore for me is number six. And I think there's a pretty decent tier between him and some of the other guys that we've talked about to this point after that top five.
Sky Moore's the type of guy where like I thought I was going to just be able to like sit back and take him in the second round of rookie drafts. But like if I have to go get him ahead of Olave, because that's the way the ADP works out, like I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do it because I feel like he's got, like I said, a really high ceiling. I mean, Stephon Diggs is kind of the like super, super upside comp where, you know, he's kind of a guy who's probably going to play some in the slot, but he can play on the outside. And to your point, Freeman, about the peripherals, one thing I do like about him is that he was really strong after the catch in college. In all three of his seasons, he averaged over 1 yards per yards after catch per route. And the only guys to do that in the PFF database in all three of their underclassmen seasons are CeeDee Lamb, T. Higgins, Jalen Waddle, Rashad Bateman, Rondale Moore, and Anthony Swartz. It's pretty nice when a guy's like whole thing is that he gets open and he's a good route runner, but he's also awesome after the catch. That feels like upside to me. And in some ways, I feel like more like modern upside, like as Davis talking about teams transitioning to a different style of football, like PPR smash upside, I think.
Yeah, I love that idea. As PPR monster, like you could see it. You could see how he becomes sort of like a Deontay Johnson type, where he just gets massive target volume.
All right. I'm even more excited about Sky Moore than I was, but let's move to Alec Pierce, who I think is a kind of another like just bet on athleticism type of guy. Really had a strong combine, and that seems to have really increased his draft stock because he's now up to 53.9. I don't know. He doesn't really have much production, and that makes me skeptical that it'll actually be a second-round pick, but he seems pretty locked into a day-two pick after running a 4.41 40 at 6'3", 211, and having a 40.5-inch vertical and 129-inch broad jump. Hyper-efficient, down-the-field type of player, 16.8 ADOT, and 11.1 yards per target over his career. So, again, kind of like Christian Watson, I think, where there's no doubt about how he's going to be used. Freeman, are you interested in him?
Not really. Like, this is the one guy I'm going to sort of like talk skeptically about. I think he's got the athletic profile, but he didn't have a lot of college production to go along with it. There are other guys that we might, you know, kind of mention in bullet point fashion later. Justin Ross, David Bell. There are other guys I would rather have ahead of Alec Pierce. Like, I just like every class has some guys who are athletic, but don't really do much in the NFL. I feel like this is one of the guys for this class.
That makes sense. Davis, where are you at?
I imagine that this will probably be a guy who ends up on a fair few number of my teams. Cause even if he gets drafted in the third round, I don't think people are going to muster up that much enthusiasm for him. Cause this is kind of the range where everyone starts to pick their favorites, right? So, you know, someone might really like Justin Ross. Someone might really love whoever the tight end three in this class is. Someone might really like Pierre Strong, maybe the Nevada quarterback, Carson Strong. You know, maybe he gets drafted by the Steelers, like, or just something. You know, this is just kind of that range of rookie drafts where you kind of start to just take the guys you like. And this feels like a pretty, I mean, maybe not even a good bet, but just the type of bet I like to make, which is like, you know, non-super elite non-powerhouse college guy who got on the field a little bit later, but just crushes the combine. And I mean, 4.41 at 6'3", 211 is pretty. I mean, that's pretty good. It's pretty good. Yeah,
it is pretty good. I mean, he basically does like nothing in terms of the analytical boxes, but how do you handle him if he gets second round draft capital?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you're putting the spreadsheet together and then you look at the expected draft position. And you're like, oh, really? Like,
yeah,
you know, Pierce was a high level volleyball player in high school.
Oh, we love to see it.
So, you know, a long history of athleticism. I mean, I basically just feel similar to him as I did like Nico Collins last year.
And I took, like, Nico, okay, like, I took a lot of Nico part, Collins when he was around. Yeah.
Like, he looks the part, but where's the production? But, you know, if he gets the draft capital, there's a chance that, you know, maybe at the NFL level, he figures it out, which I think we probably say too often to, you know, compare it to how much it happens. But to Davis's point, like, he's maybe the kind of guy that falls in these rookie drafts and you end up with, you end up with a piece of a guy who's a day two pick and has a good athletic profile. Like, there's worse things.
He's not as big, but could he be like a Donovan Peoples-Jones type?
Yeah, I could see that.
No.
Oh, well, he's not young enough. He's not. DPJ was like the youngest guy in his class, right?
Yeah.
Like, so that's not really going to happen.
Yeah, not young enough and wasn't a five-star recruit entering college. You know, like, he's playing at Cincinnati and he's not breaking out until, I guess you could say he broke out as a sophomore, but the dude caught fewer passes than Josiah DeGuara as a sophomore. Like, I'm not really counting that as an actual breakout season. He caught two touchdowns that year. Like, I'm very skeptical about him. He does feel exactly like Nico Collins, though, in a way. Like, I can't see that. Like, he's going to have, I think, day two draft capital, and he's got that great athletic profile. I wasn't excited about Nico Collins last year either. I just kind of don't see the reason to be excited about a guy who doesn't have production.
All right, so that wraps up the guys who are top 10 in expected draft position and kind of wraps up the tier, at least on Grinding the Mocks, of guys that have like a really strong chance at going round two. But let's talk about David Bell, who I think before the combine had a very strong chance of going around two. Now his draft position in the mocks is down to 79.9, which, like, does that mean he's got a chance of falling out of day two? That didn't seem likely at all pre-combine, but he had a pretty rough day at the combine. Amico, how does he rate for you? Like, how are you trying to factor in the fact that he had a 4.65 40 and now his draft position is much more uncertain, but he does a lot that we like analytically.
I don't know if you guys are going to like this answer, but I'm not worried about the 40. I don't think it's reflective of how he wins as a receiver. Like, he's a guy who's going to be in the slot. He's going to make plays underneath. The 40 only matters in as much as like how far teams are going to slide him back. And I think that that's a spot where maybe the mocks will overreact versus how NFL teams will react. Because if you like David Bell, you're not going into the draft saying, like, or the combine saying we want him to be in the 4.4s. Like, I mean, if he is, like, sure, like, you know, like, wheels up, but it's not a situation that you're expecting. You know, analytically, this is a guy that flat out is productive, gets the job done on the field. We know that teams care about this. Knows how to get open, looks exactly like, you know, some top PPR wide receivers that we've seen over the years. Davante Adams, Keenan Allen, Robert Woods. Like, these are the kind of guys that David Bell comps to. And I the Adams thing, I know, always brings up like a point of contention.
I took Adams out of my, what do you think of Jarvis Landry and Juju Smith-Schuster as comps?
Probably. I mean, if those are legit comps, that's going to be a win based on where he goes in rookie drafts.
I mean, we have him like in the top six still at receiver. Like, I feel really good about that. Like,
well, that's absurd, but I mean, he ran a 4.65. Like, it's not good, but it could still be fine. Like, I will be buying David Bell slightly above what I expect the cost to be, but I'm not gonna take him ahead of George Pickens.
Yeah, I'm like a little worried he's Mohamed Sanu. Is that a fair worry?
Well, the Patriots need a wide receiver, so
I like Bell. I'm with Amico. I think the profile, I don't have a number six. I mean, I'm with Davis on that. I think that's ridiculous. But the analysis of, I'm not worried about the 40 time, I'm not worried about that at all. I think a lot of the things that he has going for him outweigh the 40 time. You know, guys who are big like that, who have the sustained college production, I don't think 40 time matters.
Do the jumps matter to you at all? Because, like, you know, Allen Robinson had a 4.640, but then he just crushed his jumps. Really high vertical. I don't have it in front of me. I was around like 40-inch vertical or 38-inch vertical or something. So he was also underwhelming in the jumps. Maybe he'll do another round of those at his pro day and improve his numbers, but he's not going to be off the charts.
Yeah. I think that there's like a biomechanical aspect to how some of these combine numbers came out, where like the 40s were all really low and then they're doing the jumps and the agilities sometimes. And it's always like after all this stuff, like at the end of the day. And I just feel like your legs aren't as juiced.
I mean, that's why a bunch of the guys didn't do the agility drills. And that's why a bunch of the wide receivers didn't do the bench too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
They should not have had that the same day. My apologies to Allen Robinson, actually, who had a 42-inch vertical and 131-inch broad jump. So, like, if David Bell had that kind of jump profile with a 4,
yeah.
I mean, I would be okay with that in a 4.740, I think, rather than underwhelming jumps in a 4.640. Just athletically, like, it's, you know, what is he actually going to do at a really above-average level at it? But, again, I mean, like, Keenan Allen, Jarvis Landry, like these types of dudes, yes, they're also below average. Calvin Ridley's a below average NFL athlete. Cooper Kupp's a below average NFL athlete. Just, so you can get
like
there.
Just like my Odell Beckham take eventually came around to being correct, my Calvin Ridley take eventually came around to being correct as well.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if you could take a victory lap on that one, Davis.
I will also note that David Bell, in a small sample of games, outproduced Rondale Moore.
Yes.
And they played together.
Yeah.
So. Right.
That was why I was so like pre-combine, Crane and I potted like 3 weeks ago, and I was like, David Bell, like this guy, like I want to be all over this guy. And I thought he would do fine at the, I mean, I didn't have any reason to think he would be you know, bad. And then the guy who does the RAS scores or whatever, it's like, yeah, it's like his page, bomb. His page was just all red. Just red everywhere. And I was like, it's not great. Maybe he's tired. Maybe he had a bad night's sleep the night before.
Yeah, maybe he'll do everything in his pro day. I don't know. But he was efficient as a junior. He had 2.7 yards per route run. He seems like he's got the ability to earn targets at various depths. He crushes the production metrics. So I think I'm pretty in. I don't know if I'll be as in as Amico, but I think I'd have him. I don't think I'll have him too far behind wide receiver 6. I think I'll have him top, you know, top 8 or so. But okay, let's move on to Justin Ross. He's a guy that it's actually kind of similar to Pickens, where his freshman year is the reason we're excited, and just off the charts in yards per route run, 4.98 yards per route run as a freshman, which is like wildly, wildly good, but it never really got back there. He had a Friedman. Do you have the context on like what happened with his career? Didn't he have like a spinal surgery? Not medically cleared to play until 2021. So he's a 4-year player. He missed that year. And then I think he suffered a broken foot. So just injury history issues all over the place. And, you know, does that worry you from an NFL draft position perspective?
It doesn't worry me so much because, you know, like injuries are so hard to quantify. It doesn't seem as if these are things that are going to linger. He was able to return his senior year after the neck back issue and play. The issue that he had his senior year had to do with a stress fracture in his foot. And, you know, like, honestly, once that happened, he probably should have just been shelved for the rest of the year, but he wanted to keep on playing. So I'm not holding really much of his senior year against him. His junior year obviously was washed out. So I'm just evaluating him basically on what he did in his first 2 years in college. And that was awesome. So if he has the draft capital, he's got the recruitment pedigree to go along with it. He's got the college production. He's someone I hope to be able to buy low.
David, so you like worried at all that those initial years they came with Trevor Lawrence at quarterback, like, is he a product of that, or you think he was helping drive that offense?
What if it was just all T. Higgins?
Like, yeah, dude.
It's like astronaut, at like the astronaut meme. Like, it was all T. Higgins, always was. Like, I mean, I'm joking a little bit. Like, you know, I think a reasonable person could say, maybe Trevor Lawrence was surrounded by all these incredible skill position players and they all made him look a little bit better than he was, given how poor he played as a rookie for the Jaguars. Although the film bros disagree. The film bros all say he's fine and that it'll all work itself out. These are also bets I like to make, by the way, though. So, like, small school guy who doesn't really produce but is crazy athletic and big school guy who just has the pedigree and produces off and on, those are like two bets I really like to make in these later rounds. Like those are two textures of guys I really like to draft, you know. But the medical stuff is a good question, because medicals just killed guys last year, and maybe it won't as much this year since teams can actually have the guys in their building and stuff like that. I will probably just let the market decide on Ross, though. Like, I definitely like Bell better than him. And this is also a part of rookie drafts where I start to take shots on tight ends and, you know, like your Carson Strong types as well.
That makes sense. Amika, where are you at on him?
I feel like this is like arbitrage George Pickens, where Ross could end up actually being better. Like, that freshman season was just so amazing, and we just haven't gotten to see much. Like, it sounds like a lot of the same story. And
I don't even disagree with that, really.
The guy that I can't help but think of is Mike Williams, just because he had like a similar issue with like the back and the spine, and missed a year. And had to come back and end up being a 4-year player because of it. Now, Mike Williams went in the first round, so that's not going to happen here. But, you know, if Ross ends up being a solid day two pick, and, you know, I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, but the Jaguars are looking for a receiver. Like, he could end up right back with Trevor Lawrence.
They do like to, yeah, they drafted ETN, just get the whole gang band together. You know? Amari Rodgers can probably be had for a 7th-round pick, you know?
So I don't know. Like, I feel like the ceiling on him is really high. And like Friedman said, like, we just haven't really gotten to see much since then.
Where are you at on Jalen Tolbert, who is another older guy, but really, I guess, the first guy that we've talked about so far, Amika, that's actually like hyper productive for a, you know, 4+ year player. I believe he's a 5th-year senior, right?
Yeah. This is a guy that I'm just not really sure what to do with, because he was productive, but the production didn't come early. So usually that's a red flag for me. And he went to a small school, and he didn't stand out necessarily at the Senior Bowl. So there's a little bit of evidence that maybe like when the competition gets tougher, that Tolbert is not necessarily like a dude that stands out. Yeah. So I'm not really super high on him.
He kind of strikes me as similar to Tylan Wallace in a sense of like he has like some of the Courtland Sutton stuff, but at like 20 pounds lighter, which is obviously not ideal. Friedman or Davis, either of you guys into him at all?
I don't have much to say about him.
Yeah, I don't have a strong opinion on like, generally speaking, there'll be a guy like when we, well, once these guys get drafted, I will develop some strong opinions based on landing spot and stuff like that. I'm very interested to see where our next guy goes, John Metchie, considering he also injured his knee and also went to Alabama.
Well, let's talk about Metchie, because I've just not been able to muster much enthusiasm for Metchie.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the same issue with the ACL tear as with Williams, but his profile is just not nearly as good. But, you know, he was kind of like, he's like the last guy of the Alabama class who's just like completely buried. And then like he's supposed to get his time, and then Williams comes in and has the giant season. So I don't know, Davis, are you actually excited about Metchie?
You know, I don't know if I would necessarily say excited, especially because he basically was overshadowed every year he was there by someone, right? Oh, you know, barely played as a freshman. He got out for a couple games. 2020 was, of course, you know, Devonta Smith Heisman season. Though, you know, Metchie, He was second on the team in receptions. Waddle only played 6 games. I mean, whatever. And then he was good his final season at Alabama, you know, 1,200 yards and 9 touchdowns. And I guess maybe if Slade Bolden is drafted by someone in the 4th round or something, maybe that'll, I don't know. It sounds like the Patriots want him, because he's just the Patriots guy. I don't know. I don't have anything interesting to say about him, really, because he just seems like a very assembly line Alabama, kind of like the Ohio State guys, where it's like you just have no idea how to evaluate them because they play approximately 1.5 competitive games per year. That's kind of how you feel about the secondary Bama guys, like, where if you're not the lead Bama guy and you don't run a 4.38, then I don't know, you know.
I'm gonna be probably too optimistic on Metchie, and some of that is just, you know, the Alabama thing. But I don't hold his freshman season against him at all. He had Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, Henry Ruggs, and Jalen Waddle ahead of him on the depth chart. Like, he had four future first rounders ahead of him on the depth chart. So the rookie or the freshman season, that's just a wash. But what he did after that in 2020, that was pretty decent. You know, like in his first year of real action, he had 900 yards in 13 games. You know, he was the number two receiver on that team behind Devontae Smith. Like, that's pretty decent. And he was projected, you know, before Jameson Williams came, he was projected to be a first rounder. Like, a year ago, people were talking about him as a future first rounder. He does have the high school pedigree to go along with it as like a 4.5 star guy. I mean, I don't think he was that bad last year. Yeah, he wasn't Jameson Williams, but I thought he actually still had a pretty decent season last year. And I think he's got the speed. The ACL, like the knee injury, that is going to set back his draft stock, but I am going to be interested in him.
What kind of guy is he? Because he wasn't like really used super downfield, right? And
great question. What are
he had you? A lot of scheme production. 20% of his yardage came on screen passes. He was great at that. 3.6 yards per route run on screen passes. So it's not necessarily a knock, but just like stylistically, if he's not actually, he had a career 8 out of 10.1. So he wasn't a deep threat, but he's supposed to be kind of fast. He's not that big.
Yeah, I feel like that means that he was playing the Jalen Waddle role this season. What he did, like a fast guy who actually isn't being productive down the field, but underneath, and then using his speed to make plays after the catch. And I'm kind of excited just because I feel like these, like you guys are saying, like the Alabama guys who aren't the one, it's kind of like the secret box, like what's in the box. And usually the sticker price to find out what's in the box is like kind of high. But because he had the ACL tear, because he's like a day two guy and not a first round guy, he's not really going to be that expensive. So like for the price, I feel like you're getting someone who has a really high pedigree, is probably a good athlete, and went to one of the best schools in the country and competed and produced while playing with other really good players. So I'm cautiously optimistic here as well.
Nice. All right, let's close out with, actually I have one other guy after this, but Romeo Doubs, Amico, you had asked to talk about. I don't know very much about him. What strikes you about him?
Well, I just think that like he's what people want Jalen Tolbert to be. Like, he is an older player. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a 4-year prospect, but he was productive early. Some production as a freshman, but like immediately as a sophomore, productive, breaking out, 31% dominator. Did that each of his last three seasons. It did stand out a little bit more at the Senior Bowl. So Doubs is someone that like I'm feeling a little better about long-term, being able to come in and earn a role at the NFL level. Could he turn out to be like, I don't know, Tajay Sharpe or something, like someone who ends up like not really doing much? Absolutely. And the NFL is telling us that because his draft stock, you know, projected is not, super high, obviously. But like there's enough there for me to think about him as, you know, potentially being someone who has fantasy value.
He didn't work out at the combine, right?
He was there, but he didn't do anything.
Do you guys have any thoughts on him?
Yeah.
I like the idea of comparing him to Jalen Tolbert, because I kind of do see that. I think they're both in that same class of type of wide receiver. But I do think Tolbert will have, as Amico mentioned, you know, higher draft capital, and that will probably be the difference in their NFL fates. I think it's Doubs. I don't know. Maybe it's Doubs. Either way, I feel like he's going to be like, there's a reason we don't know how to pronounce his name. I'm just going to say that. Like,
because he ran a 4.7.
Yeah. I mean, like we're going to be forgetting that he even existed a year from now. Like that's my prediction. Like, he's a guy at this time of year who sounds interesting, and we look at the numbers and are like, yeah, maybe. But a year from now, I'm like, who is that? Oh, yeah, I think I kind of remember him.
Yeah. The James Prochet type where you're like, oh yeah, I remember that name.
Yeah.
He'll go in the XFL startup draft, you know, a year from now, basically.
All right. So I think that's a signal that we are time. It's time to wrap up the pod. But before we do, I wanted to bring up Wandale Robinson, who we were excited about. And you mentioned early on in the podcast, Davis, are you just completely out now that you know he's like 5'7"?
No, because Buddy, now he's going to be free.
Oh, wow. All right.
He's going to go. He's going to go in the fourth round of the NFL draft to the Steelers to replace Ray McLeod.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something like that.
What if he replaces Isaiah McKenzie?
And do you remember, Buddy, do you remember when we all loved Lynn Bowden?
Yes.
And you could just take him in the third or fourth round of any rookie draft. I mean, that's what I'm doing here.
I would love to.
Some
see
of us still love Lynn Bowden.
Put
that out there.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna be because before I would have had to have fought with people who didn't even really like him. They'd just be following ADP, and now it just I'll just be able to take him in every draft, I think.
Yeah, I like that. Are you guys in on him as that like third round pick?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the expectation? Like, I'm getting like
Rondale, but good.
No, Rondale, but unathletic though. Like that's the thing. Like he's not. He didn't.
Test. You gotta watch him play, bro. If you watch,
no,
the game,
I've watched.
You'll know.
I've watched. He's exciting. He's exciting on the field. But I'm just saying, like, he didn't test that way. Like he's the converted He's the converted running back to receiver. Like, I just feel like this guy is probably more Dexter McCluster than he is Rondale Moore. Mm-hmm. And that's
Dexter McCluster. If he was in the NFL now, would work out.
Maybe.
The NFL was not ready.
Okay.
For Dexter McCluster.
I have a comp. I'm not really even sure I like it, but if Wandell Robinson works out, I think it is very much in a Wes Welker type of way. Like Welker was a running back his first 2 years in college and then converted to wide receiver. And I think it'll be just like, okay, this guy has this playmaking yet sort of limited skill set, and we can use him in this particular way, similar size to Welker. But I think like if he is productive, that is the way he does it. I don't think it's like,
I didn't even remember that about Welker.
Yeah, I don't think it's like this guy's got an electrifying skill set, and that's why we see all the rushing production and it speaks to overall talent. Like, I don't think it's that. I think he's actually fairly limited.
All right. I think that'll do it. Freeman, what do you got going over at Fantasy Pros that the people need to know about?
It's a great question. We've got at Betting Pros, we got March Madness coming up, and then we will have a rookie draft kit with Dynasty stuff in there. So Dynasty rookie draft kit coming out, I believe, early April, and then we will revamp it after the draft. So keep an eye out for that.
Davis?
You can listen to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast, the TakeCast. I'm on TV every day, Sports Grid, from 11 Central to noon Central. That you can convert that to your own time zone. And if you search my name on any podcasting platform, you'll find all that.
Awesome, Amika.
We have all the Dynasty and rookie content at Establish the Run. We're updating the Dynasty rankings pretty regularly. We did it twice this week because the NFL went insane with all the trades and everything. We have rookie profiles coming out with a lot of really good info. So I just keep checking out all that stuff.
Awesome. I'll have an article on the site, NBC Sports Edge, on the wide receiver class out tomorrow. We're going to have a special Wednesday podcast next week to cover the free agency madness. So definitely look out for that. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.